runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 428, getting ready for Windows 10 with guest Mark Manassi. Recorded Monday, June 29th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Plop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brendan. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Back with one of my favorite people in the world, Mark Manassi. His bio is almost too long to even describe. He is a poet and a scholar and a genius in the space of Windows, and he is my friend. And welcome back, sir.
That's always a pleasure. So what do you say we talk about? I started teaching back in probably 82 or something like that.
Right.
But it was around 86, 87 that I started speaking at conferences. And by that time, by 88, I was doing talks like OS 2 is coming out. Is it any good? Should you be using it instead of Windows? And so I'm very nearly the 30th anniversary of part of my job, part of the way I make money, is going around doing talks about, hey, here's a new operating system. Does it suck or not?
Right.
And
it's always the same set of questions. That is a very good question to ask. So what about this new operating system? Does it suck or not?
You know, it's interesting. It has a we only have a half an hour.
Yes.
Of course, we've run over 2 hours, but I'll try to keep this to the 30 minutes. There are many ways to split this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
But one way to think about it is the reason Microsoft wants you to upgrade versus the reason that you want to upgrade.
Nice.
And let me be fair about this. I mean, beating up Microsoft is fun, but honestly, there's some people on the team that are good friends, and they can't say the words.
Right.
But there's this official stuff and reams of things about this. Let's talk about why Microsoft wants you to upgrade. Microsoft wants you to upgrade because Microsoft is offering you an operating system. This is for enterprise people now. The consumer stuff, their whole story is the GUI nonsense, which I'm not going to talk about because, you know, GUIs to me are like hemlines, like fashion. Oh, women's skirts are going up 2 inches. Well, they'll be down 4 inches next month and that sort of thing. So I don't worry about that stuff anymore. The only thing GUIs are really good for is it seems like about every couple of years, the guys at Microsoft say, I have an idea. Why don't we take all the administrative tools that everybody knows how to use and hide them someplace else? You know?
Those guys are looking entirely too competent. Let's mess with this.
I love command line tools. And the great thing about command line tools, and of course, PowerShell makes it even better. And the great thing is they don't change. It's not like when Windows 11 comes out that they're going to force PowerShell to use lowercase.
Yeah.
or you have to type it in red. That's never going to happen. No. But anyway, from an enterprise point of view, the Microsoft guys are pushing a lot of things that have to do with the Windows 8 stuff. You know that with Windows 8, we got this entirely new class of applications. And it's funny because if I talk to 1,000 people, and I have talked to crowds that size in the last year about this, I say, how many of you are using Metro apps, modern apps, Windows 8 design style guide apps, whatever you want to call them in your organization, particularly ones that you've built in, like, I get one hand. That's the guy from Microsoft.
It's very rare.
You know, and it's a shame, Richard, because this is a cul-de-sac we could go into. You're a smarter guy than I am when it comes to this stuff. But I've studied them, and I've learned about how they multitask, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. They have a really, really interesting, different way of scheduling time. That's the first thing. Second thing is, you know, they're built into a sandbox. And, of course, we've heard that sandbox word many times.
Yep.
You know, let us not speak of Java. But with every – and for those who don't know what I'm talking about, a sandbox means – we worry that when we put an application on your system that it could be evil, that you think you're just putting something on that changes your background every hour, but in actual fact, it's siphoning off your financial accounts and stuff like that. And so the notion is we want to have a programming model where I can build an app that even if I'm a crappy programmer, it can't do any damage to the computer.
Right.
It can damage your data. We can always damage your data because it runs as you. And there's been several iterations of this, and these modern apps are another iteration. And it's pretty good. I mean, you and I have seen that some folks like our friend Tim Huckabee mm-hmm. have built stuff that gets out of that, but that only works if you jailbreak Windows. And the average bear is not going to jailbreak you know, Windows 8.
Yeah, the deployment requirements were just too high.
Yes. And I would argue as an IT pro, the biggest problem was that deploying was a blankety blank nightmare. I mean,
right.
Inconceivably bad. And I know what the word means. It's just, you know, the nonsense where you have to log on with your Hotmail account. What? I work for Exxon. It's a ridiculous Hotmail account, you know? Deploying things beforehand, being able to say, okay, we love Windows 8, 8.1. We're going to roll out 10,000 machines, and they're all going to have the same apps. Oh, it's a problem in 8. It's a little less of a problem in 8.1, but even though Windows 10 solves that.
Right.
Windows 10 says if you want to deliver your modern apps and you want to deliver your older desktop apps, they're taking us a step closer. So that's kind of nice stuff. Part of that is I don't want to get too far down this, but PowerShell.
Yes.
Has a bunch of new, there's a new module, which they renamed, and I can't remember whether this is the old name or the new name, but I think OneGit is the name of the module.
That's the new one, yeah.
Is that what, because there was an older name and that, there was an older name and a newer name, anyway. And this is cool stuff. This is really neat stuff in the sense that all I have to say, I'm sure you've played with it, is that I'm on a new computer, and I need Zoom it, because I'm going to do a presentation.
Yep.
If I've got PowerShell, all I do is I just say install-package zoom it. And it just goes out into the ionosphere, and somewhere it finds a server somewhere that has got a copy of zoom it, and it's on my system. It's just very neat stuff. And of course, your organization could take all of your line of business apps. Because think about it. I don't know how much of this deployment stuff you've ever gotten down and dirty with, but it's neat, the idea that I want to build a new computer. Well, you know, this stuff about upgrading is all interesting, but you and I want to rebuild our computers every
yes.
year or so, right? Just because it's got the gunk. Wouldn't it be nice if we could make that stuff automated? And the whole OneGit module in PowerShell does some great stuff. Anyway, I've gone down into the weeds. So my first point was that Microsoft's point of view is that modern apps work a lot better, and they do,
mm-hmm.
because let's say you and I have a little company and we got 25 people working for us and we've used modern apps because we built something that is a modern app kind of tool. And we did that because it works on phones and it works on tablets, and with the universal apps, which is another thing in Windows 10, it's even possible for us to write a piece of code that we can pilot and it comes out on an iPad and it works. And it looks like it does on Windows 10. And we can stick it on our Windows phone, or we can stick it on our iPhone, and these things work. And this is all good stuff. This is Microsoft acknowledging that, hey, they're not going to rule the world, and that it should be easy for guys like you and me to be able to put together an app, make it useful on Windows, make it useful on other platforms as well. They're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Their heart's in the right place. Yeah. But the thing is, again, no one cares. No one's using modern apps.
Well, and part of this is a sort of a wonder of, are they backing away from Windows 8? Is this actually the halfway point between 8 and 7, or is this another direction entirely?
Well, the funny thing about it is, how many people do you know, besides geeks like you and me, who have left Windows 7 to go to Windows 8.1 because it's so bloody wonderful?
In the enterprise? Very few.
Very few, which is a shame, by the way, because there are some security updates in 8.1 that no one else has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These DMA devices you just shove into a PC card slot so that it registers itself as a DMA. Like, you've locked your computer. I walk in, I shove this thing in the card slot. It says, hi, plug and play. I'm a DMA device, direct memory access. So give me access. It gives it access. It goes into memory. It finds my password sitting in RAM and unlocks my computer or unlocks your computer, whatever.
Surprise.
That's scary stuff. There's not a single piece of Apple hardware that is proof against that.
Right.
And there's no versions of anything that I know of, except for Windows 8.1. So it's a shame that enterprises haven't embraced it for the extra security, but you can understand why. The funny thing about Windows 10, let's go back to the user interface a little bit, is that Windows 10 looks more like Windows 7
yes.
than Windows 8.1 does. So if you and I have been hired by a company of 1,000 people to move the users over from Windows 7 to something else, we have a much easier trek taking them from Windows 7 to 10.
When you get a sense that Microsoft has this incredible urgency to make sure that 10 is another 7, not another 6 or 8.
Which may be why they skipped 9 altogether. I don't want to say this is my joke, because everyone comes up with it. If you work with Windows long enough, you realize that it's the reverse of Star Trek movies, right? Because all the odd-numbered Star Trek movies were putrescent, and the even numbers were at least good.
Right.
And with Windows, it's the opposite. It's the odd numbers and that work out well. So perhaps the idea was, this is essentially Windows 9, which would be an odd number, which means it could win.
Well, and I can understand that 9 is a loaded number because of all of the 95, 98, 98 SE. Like, I think it's just a versioning number problem.
Can I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too much, but I heard that a lot because when it first came out, I had some fun one morning sitting down coming up with 8 reasons why there's no Windows 9.
Right.
And I tweeted a few of them. And some people, because that's the thing on the internet, everyone's an expert, just ask them, tweeted back that no. And there's a reference to some blog that someone wrote who claims to have worked at Microsoft back in the old days or their son in the old days, and that there's some installers that look for 9 because of Windows 95 and Windows 98. And as a result, they just say, oh, we're not working. And I looked it up, and it's all nonsense. I've actually talked to the guy at Windows
right.
who knows why it's Windows 10. I'm not allowed to tell you, but I can certainly tell you it has nothing to do with the installer stuff.
Okay.
I think it was just that I'm sure there were a lot of reasons, but I think one of it was this is the last version of Windows.
Right.
This is the last version number, in theory. If you and I are running Windows mm-hmm. in 8 years, we won't even say Windows 10. We'll be talking about build numbers. Because that's what happens from this point, is that anyone who hasn't been paying attention, you should listen up. Because sometime in the next month, you're going to get the option in Windows Update to take your Windows 7 box or your Windows 8 box or even your Vista box, if you're the guy that has one, and do an in-place upgrade. And it does a pretty good job to Windows 10, and the upgrade's for free. They will even upgrade pirated copies.
There was some argument, there was a bunch of debate around, are they really going to do the pirated copies?
You know, look, I'm not drinking buddies with Terry Myerson at Microsoft, so I don't know whether it's nonsense or not, but it could be.
It kind of makes sense to do so, and they certainly came out starting with that. But now, you know, in the past month or so, there's been a lot of conversation of, unless you have a legit license, we're not going to upgrade you.
Well, it's not just that. I have not received an invitation on my computer, and I did some looking into it. And there's a few things that make you not upgradable. And one of them is if your computer is, quote, managed by your business.
Right.
And no one can tell me what that is, but I think it means domain joined.
Yeah.
So I believe, look, I don't mind giving them.
Then everything I have is domain joined, right? I mean, I run a domain in the house, and that's just how it is.
Anybody who has more than 2 computers that have a domain is probably wasting their time. You know?
Right.
So, have you seen this on yours? Have you gotten an invitation
not on
your domain joined machines?
No. Nope.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So that led to a really interesting story that some people covered where I believe it was Microsoft's CFO was basically answering analysts who were saying, wait a minute, let's get this straight. You're giving Windows away. You used to make 89% profit on it. How are you going to do this? And she said, well, you know, by default, you'll all be starting out on Edge, and their browser will pay on the Bing advertisements.
So that they actually said that out loud? We'll make the money off of Bing?
I was not in the room. But if you read the CNET and the ZDNet coverage on this stuff, that was one of the big arguments is that, you know, we'll own the browser again, which means the default will be a Bing search. And as a result, we'll be making, and by the way, apparently Bing advertisement is on the way up. So,
well, because there wasn't far to go down. You know, when you go from 1 to 2, you have actually doubled.
Well, you know, part of it, right, is that, look, here's the future. And you know this, but the future is people are buying tablets and phones.
Yep.
And that means they're not buying computers. And computers, you put Windows on. You know, that's a real operating system. Sure, you got macOS, you know, macOS and Windows, but those are the real desktop operating systems. But now that we're not doing that, what does that mean? Well, if you're buying tablets, you and I have Surfaces because we're Windows geeks, but I don't know an awful lot of people that have Surfaces. I think it's doing better.
I am seeing more of them out in the wild that are with non-tech people, but it doesn't hold a candle to an iPad.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have several Surfaces. I have several iPads. And, you know, if I'm going to grab one machine to play with, listen to music on, watch movies, etc., on a flight to Germany, it's going to be the iPad. The iPad either that or the little Yoga that runs Android and has like 20-hour battery life or something like that. So what does that mean? We're selling less Windows. Okay, that's bad. And then from there, if you have a mobile device, then You can't have mobility without the cloud.
Right.
Okay, well, that's cool. So Microsoft doesn't own the phone business because, again, I love my Windows phone. But again, why is it? Here's a crazy thing. I have one of the, I think the number is 1020. It's the 41 megapixel camera, which is freaking awesome. I'm sure you have one too. And it takes some really, really nice pictures and some astounding video.
Right.
I mean, as good as anything as my, Canon ZR1 actual camera does. It's great stuff. But now the next generation of phones, there's no 41 megapixel. So they've taken the one thing that was really outstanding and different about Windows phones, and they've gotten rid of it.
Yeah.
So as we, you know, as we've said before, Windows phone, it's a problem because their market share, you know, the Windows market share is getting better. It's creeping up on other, you know, but that's about as close as it's getting.
It's Windows still single digit numbers.
And so what's next? Well, the next part is the cloud. Well, Microsoft doesn't own the cloud. Oh, wait a minute. They might. Because if you look at where Amazon's kind of going, I think it's reasonable to say that they may be topping out a bit. And they're really just an IaaS company, just virtual machines company. Yes, they have Beanstalk, but, you know, seriously. And they do a certain amount of SaaS, like Route 53 and such. But basically, you're building virtual machines there. Microsoft, in contrast, has worked very, very, very hard to have every kind of cloud you could imagine. And some of the numbers I've seen is that in the PaaS world, believe it or not, Azure Cloud Services are actually growing.
I mean, yeah, people not actually winning in that space. Mark, give me one second to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment, from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at ScriptRock.com/RUNASRADIO. I am excited about Azure. Because the PaaS offering is what makes sense, right? The infrastructure offering, there's not a lot of return on it, relatively speaking. You don't own the hardware. Okay, that's pretty cool, right? It's just virtual machines. When you go higher up the stack and you don't have to patch anything anymore, you don't have to own the OS anymore, the return gets pretty significant.
This is a different show we should do, but in brief, you're missing one point. So PaaS is great, because it means I can build something where I don't have to worry about NTLM, for God's sakes.
Right.
PaaS is great because when a new technology comes out at the speed of the cloud, I can incorporate it, bing, bang, boom. The betas are almost flawless.
Almost.
Great stuff. If you write, if I'm a retard ASP.NET programmer, which is what I am, and I build a basic Azure Cloud Service, and what do I get? I get agility, scalability, DR, all that stuff, it's fantastic. That's the great stuff, Richard. But the bad part is, after you spent the $5 million to build that system, you're locked into Microsoft. So IaaS is 90s technology, it's 20-teens technology, but you're not locked into a vendor. If Microsoft decides to triple their prices overnight, which they could do, you could pick them all off and stick them on Amazon in a few hours.
So yeah,
that's the yin and yang.
And that's less true now. With them open sourcing .NET, you know, the fact that I could actually take a build of that ASP.NET app and run it in IaaS infrastructure under Linux, I mean, there are options there. It's just not that simple.
Whoa, bear in mind, I was blurring a line there. An ASP.NET, the ASP.NET app is not a Azure Cloud Service app. They're close. You know, if you know ASP.NET programming, you are very close. But they're different, and you do have to fair amount of, you know, whacking and hacking to get from the one to the other. So it would be more than a couple of hours' work.
Yeah, not a trivial thing to move between the different cloud stacks, but that's always been true.
Right. So my point is that what's Microsoft's future? Lots of phones and tablets that don't control that. Very few laptops, they do control that, but oh well, it's going away. Everyone goes to the cloud. Oh, wait a minute. I think that in 2 years, one will be able to demonstrate with some good solid metrics that Microsoft is the lead player in the cloud. So what does that mean? Well, that means, well, let's have as long as we're going to have computers that still have, I mean, obviously have operating systems on them, why not have one that melds particularly well to the most popular cloud in the world, or what will be the most popular cloud in the world? That then becomes an interesting story, is that even though Microsoft doesn't control phones and tablets, that's Android and Apple, you know, they're going to support that stuff. But they're going to support the Windows stuff, the Microsoft stuff, just a little bit better.
For sure.
And so who knows? In the same way that the iPod excited people so much about Apple that Macintosh has started selling. Maybe in 5 years, the fact that you can run anything you like on the cloud, but Windows is friendliest. I think that's some of what they were thinking about.
Yeah, and it is a way to compete, is to make the most favored system, and that has its own advantages. Like, you're definitely going to have to stay on your toes. Microsoft is pretty good at this stuff. Like, they can actually build a pretty good OS.
Yes. But we should talk about some of why that's a pretty good OS. So first thing, we talked about universal apps. It's possible to build an app that will run on a little machine, big machine, with a certain amount of massaging. It can even be made to a certain extent to work on non-Microsoft stuff. So that's interesting. There's the cloud stuff. And the thing that sticks out is that you've got Windows machines, and Windows machines have always been able to join a domain.
Yes.
You know, a machine where you've got a domain controller right on your site and that sort of thing. Now you can join Azure domains. Now that's interesting. Azure Active Directory domains. They're out there. They exist. It's still a solution in search of a problem, in the sense that, well, here's the problem. The problem is, you know, back in 1997, when you were working in some company, then you had maybe CC mail for your email or something like that, and then, or MCI mail, and you had some ERP system or whatever else. And you had 15 different passwords and usernames just to get onto your computer in your business. Mm-hmm. 2000, Active Directory comes around. Active Directory by 2003, 2007, somewhere in there, kind of solves the problem, not entirely, but single sign-on gets easier. It's possible by 2008 to be able to say, okay, I'm logged into my domain, and I don't have to spend half my day typing in passwords.
Right.
Of course, now we don't care about that stuff because we're on the web. And I don't know how many accounts I have on various websites, and you don't know either how many you have, but there's a lot of them. And, of course, we're really good about having different usernames and different passwords for every one of those 200 sites, of course.
I'm a LastPass user, man. I have all different usernames and passwords everywhere. I just had my LastPass account hacked. I don't understand, you know.
Well, dude, sorry. I've certainly heard that. I have a friend who uses Dashlane, and it all boils down to, you know, you got to trust those guys.
Yep.
And so, you know, it would be nice with single sign-on for the web, and it's not going to be Facebook, I don't think.
Nope.
And, or at least on the business side, Microsoft at this point has figured out how to talk to businesses. They're a respected name in business computing and organizational computing. And this is the first step. Yeah, remember, back in 2000, if you and I were talking about Active Directory as a single sign-on device, we'd be giggling a little bit because
it was brand new. That was 15 years ago.
It wasn't even that. It's Exchange comes out, and it took Exchange 3 years to actually use Active Directory as a directory.
But that also straightened AD out. I mean, that's classic Microsoft dog fooding, too.
I'm sorry, they do what?
I mean, the thing about it, what happened with Exchange, is that made Active Directory dramatically better. You know, the pressure that the Exchange team put on it really did move it forward.
Well, you know, it was, you think about it, in 1999, you had two directory services running, both from Microsoft.
Right.
You had the one that was on your Exchange 5 box and the one that was on your NT4 domain controllers. And it just shone a light on it. This is crazy. We need to unify logons and identities. And it's even more important now. And if you have an Office 365 account, you know that, which by the way is kind of sort of Azure Active Directory, but not really.
Yeah.
You can set things up so that, for example, I have Amazon Web Services that I use for some of my stuff. Well, they have a gallery, and AWS is one of those things. And it acts a little like Dashlane in the sense that once I've logged onto my Office 365 or my Azure AD account, I'm already signed onto AWS. So, you know, do other people have this same kind of answer? Absolutely. It's possible. Whether or not Microsoft turns out to be the answer, we'll see. But I think it's a believable thing. So anyway, so cloud join is interesting. It's worth looking at. It's a little goofy in that there's obviously a basic thing I've never understood. I'd like to be able to do a cloud join to one or more Azure Active Directories. And why can't I be cloud joined to an AD domain, et cetera, but we can't. That's just the way it is. The nice thing is that if you're running Windows 8 or 8.1, you know, we have this silly thing where we've got two different desktops. There's the desktop that runs the apps you care about, and there's the, you know, the one.
The one that's basically like a 4-year-old going, pick me, pick me, pick me.
Well, you know, it's big icons because it's supposed to be finger stuff, you know, which is confusing.
Right.
You got to figure if you take someone who isn't from the Windows world, I always say, imagine you have this 15-year-old. She's really smart. She's been using Macs for 10 years. And you hand her a Surface and she says, let me get this straight. So there's two desktops. And one runs like most of the apps anybody uses. And with that one, I need a mouse or a tablet thingy stylus. Or there's the other one, which has the big icons that I can use my finger. So there's a desktop where I can use my finger, and there's a desktop where I want to give you the finger, right? And, you know, we had that in my country until, hell, the 50s, you know. Separate but equal was considered completely inappropriate. And Windows 10 solves that. Windows 10 puts all on one desktop, which puts an end to something that I have to call apartheid. So there's an end to apartheid in Windows with Windows 10.
Yeah, and unifying those things together, allowing everything to be sizable. You know, you really can't tell the difference between a Metro app and a regular Win app. Like, it's good. It really is good.
Oh, come on. You can tell the difference. You absolutely can. Are you kidding me? There's a lame menuing structure.
Yeah, well, until you start really getting into the app. But the basic behavior of the Windows itself, I mean, that's always been the struggle, right? Is, oh, I fired up one of these Metro apps, and now how do I make it go away?
Thankfully, Alt F4 always did the job.
It always seems
to those guys, although no one knows it. But they played around with the sizing and that sort of thing. Again, it's a first step. What I find odd, though, is that we still don't have a hierarchy. You know, this notion of folders is only supported in a limited fashion and not at all for modern apps, which doesn't make any sense to me because, I mean, anytime you have a group of things in a computer, there's always a hierarchy for storage. I mean, heck, we had folders in the Windows 3 program manager, for God's sake. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're just resisting it. Now, admittedly, Windows 8 taught me to simply type the name of the app I want to run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, and I like that. I like that fine. Unfortunately, now Windows 10 has this totally unified search thing where it shows you some apps, but then it also shows you recent newspaper articles that have titles. And you can adjust all that. It's just out of the box. It's just extra stuff to do.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be a non-trivial number of articles from guys like you who are going to say, here's how you actually lay this out so that it's usable.
Right, which won't be necessary until... I mean, bear in mind, you don't have to go to Windows 7 because you don't have to leave Windows 7. Microsoft's supporting Windows 7 until January of 2020, and they're supporting Windows 8 until January of 2023.
By then, you have direct cerebral cortex implants, don't we?
The HoloLens.
Well, that's another part about Win 10. And I hesitate to get into this as we're getting towards the end of the show. But this whole do you think they're serious about a holographic Windows? Like, that this really could be the future?
Yeah. Seems obvious to me.
It just doesn't seem that easy to do.
You know, we've always seen this idea for 25 years, this notion of a virtual desktop where you're reaching out and you're touching things that aren't really there and that sort of thing. But, you know, the notion of having to wear fiber gloves or stuff like that was just kind of silly.
Yep.
The HoloLens incorporates yet another improved version of the Kinect. And it's not the only tool, but I would have to say the Kinect was the first one that was really exciting. I got the little cube thing that, you know, you could wave your hands around and that worked. And everybody's got those. But I think the HoloLens is going to turn out to be really, really a seriously importantly cool. I mean, everybody I know who's a Windows geek is like, Microsoft, just shut up and take my money and sell me one of these things, you know? It looks like a lot of fun.
Well, and we're recording this just after a couple of HoloLenses went up in a cloud of smoke going up to the space station.
What happened? Oh, I missed this.
Oh, the second stage had an oxygen tank overpressure and the whole thing tore itself apart. And
so it's Elon Musk's fault. It's not Microsoft's fault.
Yes.
Just checking.
I don't know. HoloLens has powers, but I don't think it has that power. But yes.
No. I was imagining that that someone had plugged it in into a USB port in the Russian part of the space station, and the polarity was reversed, and there was a fire or something like that.
That's not what happened at all. But
well, since we're short on time, let's do some big points. First of all, Windows Store makes sense. You can now go in, and without buying Config Manager or anything else, you can set up a curated, so to speak, store. So again, if you and I had a company,
yep,
and we do want people to see all the games and stuff like that, We could go in. We don't need to spend any money on Intune. Don't have to spend any money on System Center licenses. You just go into a web portal, businessportal.microsoft.com, and set it up. The command prompt gets a makeover. I once embarrassed myself in front of a bunch of people. Howard Hughes Research, cancer research guys. And I was doing a class. We were talking about PowerShell, and I was making some demos up on the fly, and they were not working, and I couldn't figure it out. And I eventually figured out that I was copying and pasting some stuff from PowerPoint into the command prompt, and PowerPoint makes these smart quotes. I call them dumb quotes, but, you know, where they're curly to the left and curly to the right. And the command prompt doesn't understand that. PowerShell doesn't understand that. The new command prompt says, oh, I spit upon your smart quotes, and it makes it regular straight quotes. Here's a crazy idea. You take a command prompt window and you stretch it out, and the system thinks you want to keep it that way.
You can
cut and paste, and you can make the command prompt window partially transparent. I've had a lot of people try to explain to me why they think it's an awesome thing, and I'm just happy that they're happy. PowerShell 5 is in it, and PowerShell 5's got all that one-get stuff that was so nice. We've got support for zip files, which sounds like a small thing, but just the other day, a friend of mine said to me, would you send those pictures that you took of me 15 years ago? I lost the damn things, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. One-line command.
No kidding.
From just, you know, everything with this in it, bam, create the zip file. Very, very, very nice. Security, good news there as well. You know, we're not going to be using passwords much longer because it's gotten out of hand.
Yes.
You know, and it's, I'll give you an example. You know what my idea of security is? Most of the money I care about is sitting in my investment account at Schwab.
Yep.
And there's a guy I work with. And I said to him 3 years ago, I said, I'll write you a letter if you want, but don't let any money leave that account. Don't let it leave Schwab unless you talk to me on the phone. He says, I'm not sure I can do that. I said, tell me where I can send it to them. And I know that it's going to save my ass one day because,
it's a classic two-factor authentication, right?
Well, more than that, it's let's not do the cyber Pearl Harbor thing.
Nice.
So along those lines, if people are trying to go with a better answer. There's better biometric support, and Microsoft's done a thing called Windows Hello, which if the Windows geeks have all seen, but for those who don't know, you go and get yourself an expensive webcam. It's a webcam that sees not only light but infrared as well. Mm-hmm. And you walk up to the thing, and it recognizes your face, and no, you can't just put a picture of Mark up and log on as Mark. And it's fast. That's the thing too. The new biometric things where we're reading, where the idea is you don't have, we get to a world where you don't have passwords. You register your face, you register your finger, and what happens is much the same way that I think Dashlane does it, and if I'm sure, I'm not sure if certain does, but it, under the hood, it creates very long passwords you never see. And so that's the same kind of notion.
Awesome.
They have an improvement to AppLocker. You know, this whole idea that we've had several generations of things, you know, if you're not technical and you're working for me, I don't want you screwing around on the computers, my computers. I want to control what you can and can't run. And if you've ever, or if anyone listening has ever tried this, you say, oh, great, I'll just create a whitelist of acceptable apps. It's impossible to do because, you know, the people in the corner office, they've got their own special apps and that sort of thing. You don't want to make them unhappy. Device Guard is the latest version of that. So that's well worth taking a look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
I talked a moment ago about the idea of someone shoving a card into your laptop, it getting direct memory access to your system's RAM and pulling out a password. If you set it up, that will be impossible in Windows Enterprise, Windows 10 Enterprise, because Windows 10 Enterprise will actually have a cut-down version of Hyper-V on it, running a really cut-down version of Windows on it. And all the security stuff, if you've ever done a task list, and you have a thing called LSAS.exe, the Local Security Authority subsystem, all that stuff is now running in a separate virtual machine. They call it virtual secure mode or something along those lines. The other nice thing about that is that because you'll have essentially a secure place to store things, that even virtual machines will be able to have virtual TPMs, trusted platform modules. And that's important, anybody who's doing BitLocker or would like to do drive encryption. So that stuff will come in there. Understand, though, bad news, that's only going to be enterprise. As usual, Microsoft has been spanking us pro guys more and more every time. But the big thing that I haven't even talked about is that Windows 8 gets a new browser.
Edge.
There are now two. What's that?
Edge.
Yes, yes, yes. But you'd have to say that if you look at it, because there's really no Chrome on the side of it,
yeah.
It just kind of like sits there. I can't resist saying that it's a somewhat Spartan, you know, user interface. And Microsoft talks about how it's odd that it's new that Windows 10 has an alternate browser, which is odd because all of my Windows 8.1 machines have alternate browsers. It's called Chrome. And the basic idea is that the way Microsoft tells the story is that everyone hates IE. And the reason everyone hates IE is that websites, when you go to a website, there's a thing called the user agent string that says, hi, by the way, I'm from Windows, I'm from Firefox, I'm from whatever. And a lot of websites, when they see IE, Internet Explorer, they don't look at the version.
Right.
They take an IE6 friendly page and slap it onto your IE11 browser, and it looks terrible.
Yeah.
Really, really terrible. And for you, as a huge expert on the web, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But Microsoft always claimed that they were trying to stick with the real standards, the honest to God standards, as opposed to the de facto standards.
Yes.
You know, Chrome comes out with a cool new thing, everybody uses it. Mozilla comes out with a cool new thing, everyone uses it. Microsoft comes out with a cool new thing, people roll their eyes. And so, because IE doesn't support the Chrome-y stuff and the Safari-y stuff and the Mozilla-y stuff, an awful lot of websites, more and more, look like crap in IE 11. Now, let's be clear. There's a great workaround there called document mode. And if you're not looking at enterprise document mode and you are supporting IE 11, by the way, if you're out there, if you're working an organization somewhere, get your browsers to IE 11 under Windows 7 because you're translation of everything, your migration over to Windows 8 or Windows 10 is going to get a lot easier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And IE 11 is better than you think it is. Learn about enterprise document mode. You can solve a tremendous number of problems, but you can't solve them all. And an awful lot of mobile sites are very Firefox-centric, very Chrome-centric, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they look horrible in IE. I mean, really, really, really bad, even with the document mode. And so Microsoft's plan with Edge, and by the way, it's called Edge.
Yep.
Because since there isn't any Chrome around the side, it just kind of sits on your screen, and it blurs the edge between your computer and the Internet.
Nice.
You know, marketing people, special hell. We'll talk about that one day. Anyway. But here's the cool part about it. The cool part about it is this is Microsoft's way of very subtly saying, we surrender. They just wave the white flag and say, we're going to support all of the de facto standards as well as the de jure standards.
Right. But yeah, I mean, the other big thing they did with Edge is they junked a bunch of the backward compatibility. So for me in the enterprise, I can still run IE with all my compatibility modes and not have to worry about it.
Right. But they got some work to do. The first time I used Edge, I have a section of my site that has all my management stuff. And so you need to punch in a password to get to it.
Yep.
And I was just lazy. I just did Windows Integrated Authentication because nobody cares about my stuff. And I got this big screen full of red text. And I thought, oh, that can't be good.
Nice.
And so I fired up IE 11. I thought, oh, great, Windows 10 doesn't work with this. And IE 11 did the Windows Integrated Authentication. And I thought, that can't be right. And I'm talking to people at Microsoft, like May or something like this. And they said, yeah, we're going to get around to that. Which leads to, by the way, if we say nothing more about Windows 10, there's one more thing to understand. When Windows 10 drops in July, it's not complete.
Yeah.
Many of the things that are supposed to be in Windows 10 will not be in the July drop. And you probably won't see it until October or November or something like that.
Which is an interesting decision they've made. But yeah, it's going to, for the average IT guy, that seems to be an encouragement to wait.
Well, you know, it worked so well for Hyper-V and Server 2008, you know.
Yeah.
For those who don't recall, Server 2008 touted Hyper-V. But if you loaded it, it said, you know, we don't really have it done yet.
Yeah.
Check back with us. But that's the new model.
And we're going to have to get used to it.
There's this whole agile model that says if you're not breaking it, you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You should be constantly rebuilding and throwing stuff out there. And
then our job as IT people is to decide what are we willing to tolerate breaking. and what are we not, and pick and choose from there.
You know, I think it only makes sense, though, because I'm not saying it makes sense, but if it makes sense, the thing that makes sense about it is that we are in a time of great change. We're one of those, and by the way, the high-tech business, you know, we haven't been a time of great change, but there are little pieces with this disruption.
Yeah.
And right now, we haven't yet entirely figured out mobility / cloud enterprise disruption.
No.
You know, we're almost there, and let's be clear, we've been struggling with it for years. And I'm sure this will be a boring topic in 5 years, because we will have figured out that we're willing to go this far and no further. And I don't care what the 21-year-old in the office thinks. We're not leaving the jewels out for anybody to see them, you know. But anyway, so we will see changes to Windows on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the most interesting part here is that when you and I think of updates, the stuff we've been doing on Patch Tuesday since, what, heck, 2001, 2002?
Yes.
Now there's going to be two classes. There's sort of like, I don't know what the word is for it. Microsoft doesn't have a phrase, but for me, there's like feature updates. Because again, I said this in passing. Let me underscore this. There will never be another Windows version beyond 10.
Right.
In theory, 8 years from now, you'll still be running a thing called Windows 10. But they're making changes to it, which kind of gets us back to why'd they call it 10. Well, you know, Apple has a Unix-based operating system. And when they came out with it, once they left their basically Windows 3.1 kind of version of Mac, they called it OS 10. And they've never bumped it up from there. They just name it after, you know, animals and cities and things like that. And so it may just be that they're doing something along those lines. But it is interesting that we're going to be talking pretty soon. If I'm talking to you and we're trying to troubleshoot something, the first question you're going to ask me is, what's your build number? Because that's really your version number.
Yep.
No one will even say Windows 10. We'll say, what's your build number? Anyway, so that is because there'll be two kinds of updates. One is here's the new goodies versus here's the security things you really need. This is a fairly new complex layer that they're putting on top of updating called Windows Update for Business, where you'll be able to say, and I'm greatly simplifying A, and B, I'm talking through my hat because no one's gotten to play with it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's going to ship in a month or anything like that. And so I get the impression, one thing we do know is that you'll be able to create different rings of machines. So like maybe the machines in your test lab, that's the near ring, that's the fast ring. They get the updates immediately. And then maybe the IT pros get them, or the more adventurous users get them. And then eventually it filters on down to different levels. I believe, although I can't get anyone to verify this because everyone just kind of, you know, shakes their head and looks off to the middle distance when I ask these questions because the tool's not out there. But looks like we should be able to say, security updates come out, bang, just done.
Yep.
They're just immediately.
Pass them through.
Yeah, exactly. Feature stuff, not so much. So that will be very interesting to see how that works. It'll also be interesting to see if it's free. There was intimations of that when you and I were at Ignite.
Yep.
But again, it's odd how many questions have not been answered about an operating system that is shipping. And I'm talking to you today, like one of the last days of June.
Yes.
In 4 weeks, this will be out. And
Yeah. There
are so many things that guys like you and I should know these answers, but we do not yet.
But I suspect those are some of the things that are going to be pushed. I get the sense that this thing that's coming out in July is much more consumer oriented. And from an enterprise perspective, we're going to have a few months. But I guess we'll know in a month.
I guess we may, unless they decide to change it. I still haven't gotten a straight answer about whether my Windows 10, 20 phone is going to get Windows 10 or not.
Yeah, it's a good question. Mark, there goes a half hour and then some.
But well, I think we've done it again.
I think I'm ready for Windows 10 now and excited to see what happens in the next month.
As am I. Thank you, Richard, as always, my friend.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.